I have come to set the earth on fire. Taking our cue from the collect we heard at the beginning of Mass, where we asked that our hearts be filled with the warmth of God's love, I think it's safe to say that the fire which the Lord refers to, that he wishes to burn across the face of the earth, is the fire of love for God. And so what might that look like if the face of the earth were set on fire with love for God? I want to give you permission to dream big and to have big desires for God, because so often we get used to being in the pit, like in the first reading, that we forget that God does want to do big and beautiful things for us and for his church. And so I want to invite you to dream big. What if, set on fire with love for God, so many people in Dodge City returned to the faith that we had to reopen Sacred Heart, that we had to build a third or a fourth parish to fit them all? What if there was such a desire and such a love for God that building this Catholic high school that everybody keeps talking about was easy? What if there was such a love for God that we had a convent full of local vocations to the religious life, burning with love for God and a desire to form our youth? What if we had so many priests that we couldn't afford to pay them all? What if, moved by love for God, we took such good care of the poor that the state didn't have to try to do it for us? What if there was a renewal of marriage and our parishes were full of children? We're built to love God. It's what we're for. And so the more we do so, the more we and our society of which we're a part flourish. And now that can never be perfect. We can never build utopia here on earth, and when we try, it never goes well. But we should still dream big and have big desires, because we don't know the details of what it will look like, but we do know that God wants to do amazing things in and for his church. And we know that because he's done it before. The first days of the church can be our model. The first disciples were vastly outnumbered in a non-Christian empire. And in some ways, we're increasingly looking more and more like that, feeling outnumbered. But they didn't despair or lose hope. And the book of Acts shows us the roadmap of what they did instead. So at the very beginning, Acts 2:42, it describes what their life was like, and it offers us four keys, four things that were essential to the life of the early church that are still essential today. It says that the disciples devoted themselves to the teaching of the apostles, to the communal life, to the breaking of the bread, and to the prayers. Those four things. And so first, the teaching of the apostles. Orthodoxy. Holding, loving, and teaching the Catholic faith in its entirety with the trust that it's all for our good. It's all for my good. Even the difficult parts, or the parts that are hard. And trusting in that goodness because we trust in the love of the Father who gives us this faith. And so this orthodoxy, holding the faith in its entirety, isn't optional. If we desire to set the earth on fire, the fire we set has to be God's fire, the fire he reveals through his church. Because if it isn't God's fire, it becomes a destroying inferno. Anytime we substitute our own ideas, it doesn't go well, because we aren't the ones that knows what's best for us. So first, the teaching of the apostles, orthodoxy. And second, communal life, the life of community. If you take a fire and you scatter all of the logs and coals all over the place, They go out far more quickly than if they're gathered together. And so, if we're not regularly spending time with other Catholics, just living life together outside of Mass, you will go out. And the rest of us can't afford to lose you. We all need each other. And so the invitation from the Lord is to be courageous and to take a risk. Anytime we invite someone else into our life, it always involves a risk. But it's worth it. So here's the challenge. Invite people over and don't clean your house first. That's easy enough. Let them see how you actually live. Invite them into your real life. Take the risk of cooking for them and maybe not doing a good job. Let all the kids come over and be crazy and run into the wall because they're kids. This kind of communal life isn't a production. It's not something we put on. It's the only alternative to a faith that slowly starves. So Orthodoxy, a community, and then the third thing, the breaking of the bread, the sacred liturgy. Every fire has to be fueled and has to be fed. And the place where we are fed by Jesus himself, with Jesus himself, is at the sacred liturgy. And so if we want to be on fire with love for God so that we can set the whole world on fire with love for God, we have to live the sacramental life, which means, of course, Sunday Mass without exception, but to go beyond that too, regular confession, to see, is there a time in my week when I can make it to daily Mass and to be fed again partway through the week? How can I make a deep engagement with the text and the prayers of the Mass a part of my prayer so that these prayers that the Church gives us, that the Lord gives us through his Church, can form the way I pray? Because it's through that big red book that Jesus teaches us how to pray as he wishes. And to take the dignity of the liturgy deadly seriously. Because when we try to make it cute, or when we make it trivial, or when we try to figure out what's the minimum I can do to fulfill my obligation, we rob it of its power and glory to really feed our lives and to feed our love. So Orthodoxy, community, the liturgy, and then finally prayer. Because fire has to be tended. If you leave it to its own, it either goes out or it destroys your house. So you need someone there to watch the fire and to take care of it. And so when we treasure silence before God, when we try to give our best of our time and our priority to him, it allows him to tend our hearts directly, to inflame, to direct, to heal, and to protect them, to form them in the way that he desires our hearts to live. And when we live with those four things being a priority, Orthodoxy, community, the liturgy, and prayer, that will inevitably lead to division. It has to. That's why the early church, the book of Acts, is full of martyrs and confessors. Why there's so many saints, because they were divided from the Roman world in which they lived. Because if we're no different from the world, if the way we live has no differences from the way our neighbors who don't know Jesus live, then there's no reason to join us, because we've already left God behind. And he's the only one that makes this life that we try to live worth it. There's a popular Gloria that my home parish sang that really gets under my skin, because it takes the liberty of adding a couple words, which doesn't seem like a big deal, but it adds the phrase, "And on earth, peace on earth." So not only is that not the prayer that the church gives us, but maybe more importantly, that's not what Jesus promised. In the gospel, he says, "Do you think I came to give peace on earth? No, but division." Jesus Christ promises division, but always a division that highlights the love of God. A division that always invites others to cross the divide. Not that puts up a fence and says, "Stay over there," but says, "Hey, you're separate from us, but we don't want you to be. Come on over, because our part of the world is better. The way we're living is better. We have the Lord." It always invites others to cross that divide, to be filled with the warmth of his love, to love him in all things and above all things, and to attain his promises, which surpass every human desire.